morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Wednesday, March 20th. We have an informational meeting this morning. The topic is tobacco taxes. We will have presentations from Legislative Revenue Office and Department of Revenue. Would you please open this up for us?
Sure. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, today, as the chair mentioned, there will be three presentations. The first presentation will be by Day from LRO, and he's going to cover the current state of tobacco taxation. And then after that, there will be two presentations by the Department of Revenue. The first will be John Hart, an economist for the department, and the second will be Deanna Mack, who will go over the administrative details.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, they back Legislative Revenue Office. So today I'm going to talk about taxes on cigarette and other tobacco products. And we'll be focusing on very technical things about rates and the distribution. So this is what I'm going to talk about. First, cigarette tax, current rates, its distribution, and comparison to other states, and the same for other tobacco products. We're going to have to talk about different forms of tobacco products, cigars, moist snuff, and all other. So there are three different sections that touch on cigarette tax. The first one is ORS 323030, subsection 1. And it's the distribution of 58 cents or 29 mils per cigarette. So 58 cents is per pack of 20 cigarettes, and 29 mils is per cigarette. The distribution is specified in 323455, actually in percentage terms, not in mils or cents or anything like that. So I translated that into either dollars or mils form. So GF will get actually 11 mils. Oregon Health Plan is 13 mils and more per cigarette. So in terms of dollars, that's more familiar to us. So it's out of 58 cents, 22 cents to GF, OHP gets 27 cents, and tobacco use reduction gets 3 cents, and cities, counties, and Department of Transportation for elderly transportation gets 2 cents each. There's another section in the same ORS. 323030, subsection 4 has 15 cents distribution. Now you see the blank. For a couple of years, there was a little compensation to GF, OHP, and Tura, but now it is totally dedicated to Oregon mental health plan. Of programs, that is. And finally, 60 cents distribution. The great majority of it is dedicated to OHP. Now, there are some compensating distribution to other programs. Now, the distribution discussion becomes important. When we talk about revenue issues in our committee, we don't typically talk about distribution. Now, we do that because distribution is specified in the statutes. And it is the legislature's prerogative to change distribution, of course. And oftentimes, we're asked, when there's a tax rate change, we are asked to find a way to hold other programs harmless. That's when this distribution scheme becomes relevant. Now, in terms of holding other programs harmless, we're often asked to keep a certain funding level instead of percentage. So all different parts, different distributions, just all try to keep certain funding level to certain programs relatively stable. Now, over time, cigarette tax revenue will decline. Other tobacco tax revenue tends to increase. But again, when there is a big rate increase, like a dollar or two, that's when distribution has to be discussed to make sure that some programs are held harmless. All these three distributions combined, $1.33 per pack of 20 cigarettes. You see the distribution. OHB gets the bulk, about 64.5% of total tobacco, cigarette tax revenue. GF gets about 16.5%. And health gets about 11.3%. And tobacco use reduction gets about 2.6%. And cities, counties, and ODOT gets about 1.7% each. In terms of dollar figures, this is based on OEA forecast March 2019. So for the biennium in 1921, this is still forecast. And 1719, that's history, and before, that's history. So 1921, per year, we are anticipating about 200 million. So for the biennium, we anticipate about 400 million from cigarette tax. Of course, we have dedicated distribution based on distribution formula. It's all specified in ORS. We can't change that. Well, the legislature can, of course. Now, how is our state compared to other states? There are plenty of sources for states comparison. Now, we're focusing on state excise tax. Local and state and local sales taxes are extra. So for example, Oregon, we have $1.33 per pack of 20 cigarettes. California is $2.87. Washington State is slightly over $3 per pack. Idaho, on the other hand, is 57 cents per pack. Didn't write it because I want to look good. Other tobacco product taxes. These are the ones we specifically tax. The ones that are not listed here, we don't tax at this point. The cigars, 65% of wholesale price of a cigar, but capped at 50 cents. We're gonna have comparison to our neighboring states a page later. But Moistnup, $1.78 per ounce, but there's a floor at $2.14 per container. And all other, not cigars or Moistnup, it's 65% of wholesale price. Again, the tobacco products that are not listed here, not being taxed at this point. And the distribution is also listed in the statutes. And GF gets 53, a little over, close to 54%. OHB gets 41.5%. And tobacco use reduction gets 4.6%.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. I just have a question about the snuff that at $1.78 per ounce. Do you know where that number came from or whether it relates in any way to the wholesale price, or was that just a number out of a hat at some point?
I wasn't here when that was discussed, but it's just we have just close comparison to Washington State, actually. If you if you translate Washington State's per ounce or price, it's a little over $2, $2.00 per ounce. But so their rate is based on 1.2 ounce instead of one ounce. So that's strange, but pretty close. So if you translate 2.14 minimum per container, actually, if you translate it to 1.2 ounce minimum at Washington State, it becomes about $2.50. So our rates quite compares to Washington State.
Thank you.
That's all I know at this point. Mm-hmm. In terms of tax collections and distributions, we have about a little over 60 million per year, so 126 million per year collections and distributions. Of course, the distribution is based on ORS, so the percentage stays the same. How do we compare to other states? Actually, the links will give you good information. This is how bad I am in terms of technology. And okay, so thank you. Oregon, in general, 65% of OTP wholesale price. We have a cigar cap and moist snuff floor. And California just changed for this year. Until last year, it was like 65%. Now it became 62.78% of OTP. Actually, California included vaping and e-cigs as part of OTP, so they are being taxed at this rate. Washington State, 95% of wholesale price. Cigar cap is 65 cents for Washington State. And moist snuff floor is about $2.50, quite comparable to our rate. Little cigars are subject to cigarette tax rate in Washington State.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just looking at these three states' comparison, it looks like Washington has a significantly higher tax rate on tobacco in general. And the advocates of raising the tax on tobacco have said that if we raise the price, then it will stop, well, discourage usage, which I agree in general with the principle, but I'm wondering, has it stopped usage among underage students and children, which is the real drive behind such a measure in Washington compared to Oregon, or do you have any data on that?
I don't have recent data, and just the word I hear is there is gradual decline in consumption, but we're not making real headway in curtailing consumption.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Reschke, because we're having additional informational hearings tomorrow, I suspect that people are listening to the questions that we're asking today, and if some of the presenters who will be with us tomorrow have the answer, they'll probably provide it in their testimony tomorrow.
And Madam Chair, I have no particular agenda on this issue other than to try to understand what reality is.
Of course. And I bet someone's making a note and will respond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that would be great to have information to have. I read a news article the other day about the trend is not going in the right way. It's the usage is increasing significantly. So I would sure like to have some real data to see how that is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you're off the hook for right now. We'll put it on someone else.
On top of cigarette tax and OTP taxes, there is master settlement money that are being used, about $70 million a year. The settlement is forever, so that money flows in regularly, and we put that money to health-related programs. That's there. So until from 1999 until last biennium, we had a collection of about $1.5 billion out of settlement money and being put to use health-related programs. That's about $70 million a year. A little note on e-cigarettes in anticipation of tomorrow's discussion. It's a good states comparison. If you click the links, it'll show you whether the e-cigs or vaping products are defined in certain states, how they are defined, are they being taxed, what measures there are to prevent, underage access to these products, what enforcement efforts are there, stuff like that are all listed there. But we will have plenty of information probably tomorrow. Good. And I am done.
All right. Thank you. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One observation I wanted to point out on one of the earliest slides was, and this is no commentary, it's just an observation, is that on our tribal reservations, they are exempt from collecting the tobacco tax. And again, this is an observation, not a commentary, but they do utilize the services that we all benefit from the collection of those resources. And in particular, I think it was back in 2003 or 5 or 7, one of those years, there was a broad conversation on a percentage of that money that goes into senior busing. And our tribal partners receive a portion of that money, but then again, do not collect it. And so, again, that's not a commentary. It's just purely an observation.
Thank you. What's next?
So next we have John Hart from Department of Revenue and Deanna Mack from Department of Revenue.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Hart, and I'm an economist at the Oregon Department of Revenue. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to talk about cigarette sales and mostly border effects. Really, what I want to talk about today is why changes in consumption and changes in the taxed sales of cigarettes aren't exactly the same thing. And for Oregon, especially, most of that comes from cross-border sales. So the way we think about changes in the consumption and the changes in taxed sales when we raise a tax or lower a tax or change the price in any way, is a concept that economists call price elasticity. And there seems to be a consensus that the price elasticity of consumption of cigarettes is about minus 0.4, which means if the price of cigarettes increases by 10%, then the consumption is reduced by about 4%. I don't want to give false confidence in that number. There's a lot of disagreement about what that number is. This 0.4 might be an average. It might be an international average. Recently in the U.S., I think the price elasticity for consumption has been a little bit higher, so that the effects of price changes have been higher. There's some research that suggests that the price elasticity is higher for higher prices. So this 0.4 is kind of an average. To a point made earlier, that number, the average consumption decline for the average price increase is actually higher among youth, because youth don't have as much disposable income. A $20 pack of cigarettes is harder for them to afford than a $10 pack, and they actually decrease their use more than an adult would, who would have more disposable income. But an important point here is that the consumption decline is only a part of the decline in taxed cigarettes. The other part of the decline comes from changes in how the consumers go about getting their cigarettes. And so some of that is going to be smuggled cigarettes, and smuggling comes in kind of organized crime fashion and in the more common casual smuggling, where a person might drive over the border to a Costco, grab a carton of cigarettes, and then drive home across state lines and not pay the tax in their state. That would be the casual smuggling. So Oregon benefits significantly from sales into Washington. So right now, in Washington, as Day noted, the tax on cigarettes is $3.03 roughly per pack, and the tax in Oregon is $1.33 a pack. That comes to a price difference of about $2 a pack, and so it's profitable for people in, say, Clark County to make a drive of a certain distance to come into Oregon. They're probably shopping in Oregon already, come into Oregon and buy their cigarettes in Oregon. If the price in Oregon increases, the distance that people are willing to travel to come to Oregon to buy their cigarettes is going to diminish. I like to think of it as kind of a semicircle around Clark County, where with high prices, high price difference, you have a very big circle people are willing to travel, and with low price differences, that circle gets smaller. The casual smuggling has gotten a lot harder since about 2005. In 2005, the major credit cards banned use of credit cards for directly purchasing cigarettes online. There were ways around that, but the Department of Revenue paid for internet sales data from a company called ComScore for a couple of years. And in 2005, the sales of online cigarettes to Oregon residents was declining. And I think it was in 2006, it had become imperceptible in their sample. So the banning of use of credit cards had a big impact on the internet sales. The major carriers, UPS, FedEx, and at the time DHL, stopped knowingly shipping cigarettes, I think also about 2005. The U.S. Postal Service, there was a law enacted in 2009 called the PACT Act. I think that's Prevent All Cigarette Trafficking. And that actually mostly banned the shipment of cigarettes to consumers through the U.S. Postal Service. There are exemptions for shipments to military bases. So if you have a loved one in the military, you can still buy them cigarettes if you take that pack to a post office and ship it directly to a base, for instance. There's some research on the effect of the internet, and there's some research on the border effects. I don't know that any of that gets Oregon exactly right, because Oregon and Washington's relationship is so unique among states, where they have a sales tax, we don't have a sales tax. They have high cigarette tax,
upon which the sales tax actually applies. We don't have the high sales tax, or we have a lower cigarette tax with no compounding sales tax. But there's a couple of examples here. Also, we did some testing in 2004. We sent a bunch of our inspectors out to retail establishments in Oregon, and we actually found that the compliance with stamping at retailers is very high. It was higher than 99.9% of cartons at the retailers we knew about that were in our sample had a proper stamp affixed to them. So right now we don't have direct evidence that smuggling is an issue. The banning of credit cards is less effective now than it was because of the increase in things like Bitcoin. Now you can use Bitcoin for your international transactions, and that's hard to detect. Customs and ATF, I think, still are seizing cigarettes at the border. But for Oregon, the largest difference between the change in consumption and the change in taxed cigarette sales when the tax changes is that net cross-border activity. On a very high level, I have here a graph that shows over time the taxed cigarette packs per capita in Washington and Oregon. And Washington's smoking rate in 2016, according to CDC, was about 14%, and Oregon's was about 16%. If the smoking intensities are the same, you would expect these per capita sales to be a lot closer if all the packs of cigarettes were taxed in both states to their residents. But what we see with Oregon and Washington is that Washington is now at 17 packs per capita as of 2017. Oregon is taxing 38.3 packs per capita. We're actually at a point now where Oregon is selling more taxed packs overall than Washington is. Washington's population is not quite twice as high as Oregon's. Washington has other issues. I think you can buy untaxed cigarettes in Washington on Indian reservations that are closer to population centers. In Oregon, if you buy a pack of cigarettes on an Indian reservation, it's been subject to the tax, or it should have been, because they buy it from distributors that have paid the tax. And we actually pay them, we have agreements with the tribes to pay them back a rebate for tribal member purchases of cigarettes. And so we don't think we're losing tax sales to tribes.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, that's great to know. I stand corrected then on my previous statement. I was under a different understanding. So on the record, I want to stand corrected on that. Thank you.
And our net tax revenue actually is net of the refunds that we give to the tribes for the sales, the estimated sales to the tribal members. One thing to note on this chart is that Washington, you can see in 2010, Washington increased their tax by a dollar per pack. And you can see Oregon's per capita sales from 2010 kind of increase, where Washington's per capita sales continue their decline. This is a pattern you see. You can actually see it fairly well in monthly data, where you see the opposite effect in each state when they raise their taxes. So Oregon had kind of relatively small increases 2014, 2016, and 2018. Not on the graph. Those don't seem to have as much of an impact on the sales. But it is kind of striking the difference in the per capita taxed sales, where the consumption is not that different. And this looks all official and super definitive. I don't want to present it that way. Kind of an economist toy box is the regression in Excel. And what we did back in 2002, we had a really cool natural experiment where January 2002, Washington raised their tax 60 cents per pack. And in November 2002, Oregon raised their tax 60 cents per pack. And so you can kind of look to see what is the difference in sales in those intervening months, and you can attribute it. That's not the right word. You can think it's related to the 60 cent per pack increase. And so just a simple thrown together regression with an adjustment for that showed that between January 02 and November 02, the estimated per month sales in Oregon went up about 0.65 per capita, packs per capita per month, which was about 11% over that period for a 60 cent increase. That was about 2.3 million packs per month, or about 22 million over that period. So for a 60 cent increase, that's what we get. And whenever a tax increase is discussed, you usually hear from the retailers who have border stores saying that it really affects their sales in their border stores. And with a good portion of our population along the border, and with a decent sized portion of Washingtonians coming to Oregon to get their cigarettes, this is why, and this is a good example. Usually it's very difficult to disentangle these effects. I'm not going to say this is totally disentangled, but there is very clearly a relationship between Washington and Oregon's price per pack, which is related to the tax per pack, and the sales across the border.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Jonathan, for this data. Do we have any information that says that Washingtonians only purchase cigarettes when they cross the border? In other words, my question goes to, I come to purchase cigarettes, but then I also buy other items while I'm in the store in Oregon before I leave. Do we have any kind of data that shows that kind of relationship?
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, I don't have that data in particular, but I heard a couple years ago that the Woodburn outlets were the number one or number two tourist attraction in the state. I believe that there is a strong incentive for Washingtonians to cross the border and purchase goods generally in Oregon. So it would make a lot of sense if you were as close to a Costco in Oregon as you were to a Costco in Washington to go to the one in Oregon. Right. And buy everything while you're there, including cigarettes. Cigarettes might be special in that I believe that the people who live fairly far away might make a periodic trip to Oregon to get their cigarettes and maybe grab cigarettes for family members or friends at the same time. But we don't have direct evidence of that. We just know that there's this large border effect with Oregon cigarettes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So conversely, do you have any data to reflect the amount of Oregonians that go to Idaho to buy their cigarettes? I live in Malheur County. I see all the cars driving to Idaho, and there's long lines of people lined up.
Madam Chair, Representative Finley, yes, we know that happens. We don't have that data. There is an exemption in Oregon law if you buy a carton, a single carton in Idaho, and smoke a cigarette before you bring it back to Oregon. It's not taxable in Oregon. So maybe they're taking advantage of that exemption.
I may have fallen off the truck, but it wasn't yesterday.
So, the price in Idaho is 57 cents. And so we know that there is a border effect there too. It's just that the Oregon population out there is relatively small compared to Clark County's population or Multnomah County's population.
So do you have any, you take a community of 40,000 people. Do you have any statistical data that says that community smokes less than others because Ontario and the surrounding areas collect less revenue from tobacco sales than a typical community of that size? I would think that number would be significantly less, and it's not because they're healthier.
Madam Chair, Representative Finley, I agree with you. It's probably significantly less. We impose the tax at the distributor level, so we don't actually have kind of the geo indicators of the tax sold in the regions. But yes, we would, for other reasons, things like average income levels, we would expect the smoking to actually be higher in that region. But yes, they're definitely going to be going over to Idaho and grabbing maybe more than 199 cigarettes at a time and bringing them back.
One never knows.
Thank you.
And there's the cannabis traffic coming the other direction.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a traffic jam.
Oh yeah,
it's an incredible traffic jam.
Yeah.
So then it's a very complicated market. I didn't touch on some of the other complications. When we think about price, we're thinking about average price. The average price in Oregon in 2017 was reported by Orchakowski and Walker at $6.12 a pack. I have reasons to think that that's low for an average price, but it represents kind of the average between the low end and the high end. I'm sure you can find a $5 pack, and I'm sure you can find an $8 pack. And so the difference in sales and tax on those kind of tiers of product is also going to be different. We wrap it all up into this one number we call elasticity, and that's really oversimplifying the issue. There's also the e-cigarettes are currently a substitute. We know that e-cigarette use among youth, I think, is up. I understand the mango flavor of the product called Juul, J-U-U-L, is very tasty. I don't have any direct experience of that, but mango flavor is the thing that you read in the New York Times when you read about Juul. There's going to be substitution between cigarettes and smokeless tobacco. People, if they're just in it for the nicotine, can switch between those two products. I don't know that that happens a lot, but then the relative prices come into play. So everything I've talked about here is kind of oversimplified, but the one thing we know is this border effect is big.
So that is indeed a very cool slide. But you said we're not supposed to take it too seriously.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, are you going to put this up in your office, frame it, or
yeah,
not quite that cool, huh?
And that concludes my prepared material. If there's more questions, I'm happy to take those or turn it over to Deanna.
I do have one question for you. Yes. You were talking about internet sales, and shipping, and with credit card, you can't use credit card to purchase it, and the delivery outfits, whether it's UPS or USPS, they're not supposed to knowingly deliver it. Do we have detection dogs in use at some locations? I know there are dogs that can detect tobacco and do, but is that put in use to ensure enforcement?
Madam Chair, I don't have any information on that. I do know that we seize cigarettes at the border. I do not know what procedures are in place with the shipping companies to look for them. I don't know how actively they look for them, rather than just knowing this retailer sells cigarettes, so we're not going to work with that retailer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because this is a real issue, I there's a piece of information I'm hoping someone could provide this committee. One of the issues that we continually hear is the regressive nature of this tax and the impact it has on lower income Oregonians. I wonder if there's a way we could get a chart that maybe goes back 30 years and shows minimum wage and its incremental increases, and then reverse indexes the cost of tobacco products over that time, and to see what that gap is between wage increases at minimum wage and the cost of a pack of cigarettes over that period of time, and to see if that gap is widening or shrinking. I think that'd be very interesting for those who are looking at this. And I don't know how challenging that is. Is that something that's available to get? Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And I don't want to create extra work if it's too hard. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Deanna Mack with Department of Revenue, and I'm going to fill in some blanks because I think the other two gentlemen have already presented quite a bit of the information that I had today, so I won't repeat it for your benefit. One of the things that I did want to, I think John may have mentioned that we do not have an inhalant delivery tax in Oregon right now, the vaping. It's just on cigarettes and other tobacco products. We are a member state in the master settlement agreement with tobacco companies, which requires that we do diligent enforcement of the tobacco tax laws in the state in order to receive the settlement payment. And that's about, I believe, around $70 million a year. We've received over $1.5 billion over the lifetime of that agreement. I think the Department of Justice is typically the one that kind of manages that agreement. But we do perform audits to ensure that taxpayers have filed returns properly. And we perform surprise inspections to ensure that untaxed products aren't or contraband isn't being sold in the state. The MSA, the Master Settlement Agreement, does not cover OTP products, so the cigars and moist snuff, the other tobacco products. In Oregon, the way the law is written, it's cigarettes are taxed at a per stick rate. It's just over 6.5 cents per stick. So every pack of cigarettes in Oregon must have an Oregon tax stamp affixed to it. Only Oregon licensed distributors can purchase the stamps. A cigarette is any roll made wholly of tobacco and intended for smoking that has a wrapper that's made of paper or other substance that doesn't contain tobacco. A product can also be classified as a cigarette if its wrapper does actually contain tobacco, which is typically a cigar, but the product is likely to be mistaken for a cigarette due to its contents or its appearance or packaging and labeling. If a person buys a cigarette that is not a pack of cigarettes that does not have a stamp on it, then that person is responsible for the tax, whether they're purchasing it for a business or for personal use. Other tobacco taxes, the cigars are 65% of the wholesale sales price with a maximum tax of 50 cents per cigar, which makes this the wholesale sales price of 77 cents per cigar to get to that 50 cent cap. Moist snuff, as I think Day may have already talked about, is weight-based. It's $1.78 per ounce, and the minimum tax is $2.14 per retail container. And there were changes, I think you can see in one of the LRO reports, that those changes were made in 2009, so it's been in place for quite a while now. All other tobacco products are 65% of the wholesale sales price. The tobacco products include cigars, smokeless tobacco, which is snuff, chewing tobacco, snus, and the dissolvables containing tobacco, things like that. It is blunt wraps, pipe tobacco, shisha, which is what's the flavored tobacco in hookahs, roll your own, or any other type or kind or form of tobacco that can be chewed or smoked, except cigarettes. And just a note, products that contain nicotine derived from tobacco but don't actually contain tobacco are not subject to the tax. So the Zyn nicotine pouches and Camel Orbs are two examples of that. Moist snuff includes any form of tobacco that is not intended to be smoked or placed in the nasal cavity. If a person, I'll leave you with that. If a person buys a cigarette pack, again, that is not stamped or other untaxed tobacco that is not taxed, then they are still responsible for it. I know John mentioned the exemption for $199. That is actually a thing. That a carton of cigarettes is $200, but if you purchase $199 or less, then you're exempt from the tax. So I'm going to talk about licensing. This can kind of get a little complex because there's a lot of licensing in Oregon for the cigarette program to track with the Master Settlement Agreement and ensure that we have good enforcement here. So distributors must obtain a cigarette distributor license before they can purchase stamps or distribute cigarettes in Oregon. So if a person wants to distribute the other tobacco products or OTP, they must too be licensed. So wholesalers if they want to sell, if a retailer basically is selling to another retailer, they are considered a wholesaler, and they also must be licensed before they can sell cigarettes to other wholesalers, or excuse me, to other retailers. Licensed wholesalers must purchase stamped cigarettes from licensed distributors. So they don't do the stamping themselves. They get the stamp from someone else is stamping it. Licenses are not transferable, so that means the licensee must be licensed for each location from where they sell cigarettes or other tobacco products, and the license cannot transfer to someone else, as might occur, you might think would occur in the sale of a business. They are non-transferable. Currently, retailers are not required to be licensed at the state level. However, several counties in Oregon have adopted licensing requirements. Multnomah, Lane, and I believe Klamath County come to mind. There are currently about 4,000 retailers, we estimate, that are operating in Oregon now. We have about 40 licensed distributors of cigarettes in Oregon. So they must, like I said, obtain the license before they purchase the stamps. They must purchase stamps directly from us. They must affix the tax stamp to the package of cigarettes before selling them in Oregon. So they have this machinery that actually opens the cartons and stamps them and closes them back up. And they must file a quarterly reconciliation report with us, even if they didn't have any activity in that quarter. So they're a quarterly filer. We have about 175 licensed wholesalers in Oregon of cigarettes. So they have to get their license before they can offer cigarettes to other retailers in Oregon, and they must purchase the stamped product from the distributor or licensed distributor. We have about 160 licensed distributors of other tobacco products in Oregon. They file quarterly, even if there was no activity. And these distributors, we may require to post bond in the form of a surety bond to ensure the compliance with the tobacco tax laws.
What types of distributors are those that are licensed for other products?
Other tobacco products? I have a list here. We have it on our website. They're in alphabetic order. There's Costco Wholesaler is an OTP distributor, Core-Mark. City Rose Trade, they're all published on our website.
Does it include businesses, I'm not sure whether you call this consumption or use, but where someone is smoking a water pipe, so it's on-premises use? How does that fit into this scenario?
I believe, Madam Chair, on-premises use is not something that I don't think the Department of Revenue deals with on-premises use. We just ensure that the tax is paid on the product. We go into retail locations like convenience stores, markets, grocery stores, and do inspections to see that the tax has been paid. I believe that Oregon Health Authority and other agencies track the, like for minor usage, where it comes in on-premises and porch smoking, indoor-outdoor smoking. I think that's through the Health Authority, I think.
Okay.
I think I left off with manufacturers. So cigarette manufacturers file a monthly report to tell us how much of unstamped cigarettes they're selling to distributors in Oregon. The OTP manufacturers must file quarterly to show what they're distributing that doesn't have the tax on it yet, so that we know how much the distributors are getting. Retailers, they purchase already stamped cigarettes from a licensed distributor, so the licensed distributor is the one who's paying the tax, and they get that back from the retailer, who then gets it from the consumer. Same thing for the OTP. They must purchase the tobacco products from the licensed person. So retailers, though, they have some burdens. They have to show that they have paid the tax on it. So they must keep receipts for the invoices for the cigarettes, the purchase of cigarettes or the other tobacco products for 5 years or until the products are sold, whichever is longer. Receipts and invoices must be available for inspection by us. If a consumer purchases unstamped product or untaxed product, They have to file a use tax return in Oregon, and I won't venture a guess on how many people do that, but they are monthly for cigarette taxes and quarterly for OTP for the other tobacco products. And we already mentioned this, the exemption for the 199 cigarettes in a single lot. So if they do buy that, then they have to file a report, a monthly report, and they have to do that by the 20th day of the month following the receipt of the cigarettes. So those, there are a few people that do that.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Deanna. Going back to the retailer and having to pay, is the tax on their invoice a separate line item?
And Representative Reschke, I believe it is separate, and I'll talk about what the invoices are going to contain in a little
Very
bit.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. We have the ability to charge penalty for the amount of for failure to file or pay the tax due. It's 5%, which is pretty typical amongst all our tax programs. If the tax continues to be unpaid beyond 30 days, it's an additional 20% penalty. And then interest accrues as well under normal interest provisions under the law. And additionally on this one, we may assess a civil penalty of up to $1,000 per violation of state cigarette tax laws. So in the inspection world, our field agents conduct surprise inspections at cigarette and other tobacco retailer locations every year. So we try to do about 175 inspections a month. And so far we've done over 2,500 inspections this biennium. We do not do the minor stings. That enforcement is with the Oregon Health Authority and the State Police, DOJ. They contract together to do that. But upon an agent of ours entering a business for a tax inspection, they will present identification showing that they're there from for official purposes and asked to speak to the owner or manager. They'll explain the purpose of the visit, and they will ask to examine cigarettes and tobacco products themselves. We prefer if they have an employee with us when that inspection is occurring. We ask to examine receipts and invoices for the tobacco products and cigarettes that are on the shelf. And sometimes if they don't provide that information, then we have to issue a subpoena, administrative subpoena, to have them provide that information to us. Retailers must keep those invoices, and the invoices must show the seller's name and address, the date of sale, and the quantity and description of cigarettes sold so we can figure out the tax that was paid on them. Retailers must maintain invoices also for all other tobacco product purchases, and the invoices must show the license number of the distributor, a certified statement that all taxes have been paid or will be paid, the seller's name and address, the purchaser's name and address, the date of sale, and the quantity and description of tobacco products sold. OTP is a little harder to enforce because it doesn't have indicia physically attached to it like the cigarette tax does. Cigarette packs have a little stamp on them that make it very easy to see whether the tax has been paid. We will seize cigarettes that are in the possession of a retailer if the tax does not have if the box does not have a tax stamp on it, if it has a tax stamp from another state on it, if it is a package with a counterfeit tax stamp, or if it is a package that was manufactured for U.S. export only, which is the gray market product, or if they're selling single cigarettes, we'll seize those. Also, the Department of Justice maintains a list of approved brands and whether they participate in the MSA, the Master Settlement Agreement, or not. And so we'll seize brands of cigarettes that are not on that approved list as well. If a cigarette is seized, a retailer has an opportunity to redeem them. They have 30 days to do so by showing invoices that show that they paid the tax on there. So we hold on to them for a while. Brands of cigarettes that aren't allowed to be sold in Oregon may not be redeemed unless the retailer shows that they were purchased before they were not approved in Oregon. The list shows the date when the product is eligible to be sold in Oregon. So if they purchased it and then it became what we call delisted, comes off the list, if they purchased it in that window, then they can redeem it and get it back. Gray market products are not redeemable, so if they were made for U.S. export, we do not return those. And if a product is not redeemed, we burn it. So there is a great incentive for retailers to comply with the law for this reason, because not only, I mean, if we actually get to the level where we're burning seized product, they lose not only the underlying cost of the product itself, but also any federal tax they may have paid on top of if they had, obviously they are in this situation because there wasn't state tax paid, but yeah. Tobacco, for the other tobacco products, if the retailers don't have complete invoices, they're responsible for paying 100% of the paying the tax due, as well as any administrative costs and a penalty of up to 100% of the tax due. Both the tax and penalty are due immediately, and the civil penalty may also be imposed. So the other thing about that is that just paying the tax, penalty, and administrative costs doesn't relieve a retailer of any fines or from potential imprisonment for violating those tax laws. And I think Representative Smith and John already kind of talked about this, but we also do have agreements with the tribes we have authority in the statute to enter into agreements with the 9 Oregon tribes to collect state cigarette and other tobacco tax products. And the reason is it helps aid us in our ability to make sure that there isn't untaxed product being sold in the state, and it eases our enforcement. So the tribes agree to sell taxed product on reservation land, cigarettes mostly. And as part of the agreements, the tribes are rebated an estimate of the tax paid by the tribal members based on a formula determined in the agreements that is specific to each tribe. Factors include like consumption rates and population rates within the tribe. We currently have agreements with 8 of the 9 tribes for cigarette taxes and 1 of the tribes for OTP. So depending on the agreement, some of the tribes are paid annually and some of them are paid twice per year. So we currently have authority to enter into agreements to administer for both cigarettes and OTP. And so that's really all I had to cover today about our administration. If you have any questions for us, for me, or even for John, he's still here.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry I missed the beginning. I just wanted to make one question and one observation. The question is, I had no idea about the tribes and the taxing. That's really interesting and sounds like a great agreement.
Yes.
Do they pay federal tax on the cigarettes that they?
Madam Chair, and
that's an intergovernmental issue, clearly. I just wondered if you knew.
I don't know what their agreements are with the federal government.
Okay. And number 2, it just sounds like a lot of this is a very high, clearly a lot of it required by the Master Settlement Agreement, but this is a much more hands-on management system, the taxing system of tobacco products particularly. It's very striking. So thank you that's important for us to know. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Representative Rushkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just going back to the, I'm going to go back to the border question and cross-state sales. What percentage are cross-state sales of all the cigarettes sold in Oregon? How much is from a Washington consumer or an Idaho consumer or California consumer compared to just an Oregon resident? Do we have rough numbers?
Madam Chair, Representative Rushkey, we really don't. We just know, for instance, that if you look at the per capita tax sales in Oregon and Washington, we have a much starker difference than consumption would indicate. We're not able to tease out, say, what part of Washington sales is lost to their tribes, to their military base, to the other non-tax sources. We're not able to tease that out. Washington regularly produces a report where they estimate the compliance with their cigarette tax. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but they don't really break out that border effect themselves. And just because it's hard to know if it's a tribe or if it's Oregon.
Sure.
And vice versa for us and Idaho.
Questions? Thank you.
Yes.
That concludes our informational hearing for today, except for one thing. I think we should acknowledge that it's someone's birthday today. Day, happy birthday.
Oh.
Is there cake anywhere?
There's no cake, and no. It's not taxed either.
Tobacco.
We will have a continuation of information topics related to this topic on tomorrow. So for today, we're adjourned.